However you are listening to Grant and Danny, we appreciate you and thank you for doing it. Brought to you by the law firm Condorian Murad. They'll get you squared away with a last will and testament, a living trust, or a medical power of attorney. Schedule a consultation with their attorneys today at kmlawyers.com. Let them know we sent you. You'll get a discount. That's kmlawyers.com. Beltway Blitz is chock full. We'll talk Commanders. They are in Foxborough today for practice. The NFL, spin you around the league. But we've also got to talk Nationals baseball. And I say we've got to because it's not as fun as it once was to do that. But a man who makes it more enjoyable, our friend Dave Jagler of the Nationals Radio Network, gets us started. Jags, you were punching that time card last night, boy. That was earning your paycheck, my guy. 16 runs. The A's, not the Brewers. Allen Iverson style, not at practice. We're not talking about a game, not a game. This was not the Brewers who were headed to the playoffs. This was the A's. That was UGLY, and the Nats didn't have an alibi.
Yeah, how you doing, Grant? I'm good. Thanks.
Good to see you, buddy. Good to hear from you.
Well, I mean, it's been a rough stretch. I mean, this team has been through a couple of those this year, but in a way, this almost feels more demoralizing when they lost 11 in a row, because in that streak, it felt like they could have won maybe 7 or 8 of those games. Here, they've been down early and down and out for most of the night. So, yeah, we're going deep into our preparation story time, just trying to keep it entertaining over the course of 3+ hours with all the pitches being thrown. So that's our job. You know, that's what we signed up for. So we're going to call a big league game tonight, and we're going to try to make it fun and entertaining, and hopefully this one will be a win.
Well, you guys did that. You kept me entertained. I mean, it was a busy game. There were a lot of runs. You could have a recap of this game would have taken 6-7 minutes probably. I mean, it was ridiculous action from the A's perspective. Jags, how about Cade Cavalli tonight? 3 years in the making, we'll see him on the mound for the second time ever.
Yeah, I mean, I punched it in. It's 1,076 days since his first, and that to this point, only big league start. You know, saw him walk in the clubhouse. He was greeting guys, big smile on his face. So this is a long time coming, and this is a big 6 weeks for Cade Cavalli. I mean, right now, from the way things have gone here in the second half of this season, the Nationals have need for starting pitchers. So they have to find out what they have in Cade Cavalli. He's a first-round pick. He was going to make the rotation in 2023 before he went down to Tommy John surgery. And so last year was a lost year after the year off from surgery. And, you know, did he dominate AAA? No, his ERA was over 6, but there were some good things. He averaged well over a strikeout per inning. He's been missing bats with his curveball and his changeup. His fastball has been hit hard. So let's see if he can command the fastball at this level. The A's proved last night they can hit a fastball that's in the middle of the plate. That's where Gore tried to live, and it didn't work. So we know he's got the good curveball changeup. So it's almost like a second big league debut for Cavalli. Hopefully he can stay healthy, finish the season on 2 feet, and make an impression to go into next year being a key part of this rotation.
Jags, one of the few bright spots on this team is James Wood, but not recently with the struggle that he's been in. What have you seen out of him during his struggles? And it feels like he's getting the ball a little bit better recently, but what do you see out of him?
Yeah, we're looking for anything. I mean, there was a hard ground out last night, and you're trying to grasp for that straw. It's just so many strikeouts, and what we've seen is when he doesn't go, the engine, that's not driving the train. So this offense has been kind of stuck in it, but you can't hang what's happened this homestand or the last couple of games in Houston on the offense. But yes, James Wood needs to get going again, and clearly maybe his swing was a little bit off. He was kind of jumping at the ball, not staying back and driving the ball with authority to left center field, which is the patented James Wood swing. And maybe the result of flying open, cheating a little bit, the pitch selection has been not what it has always been. That's always been his calling card. We compared him favorably to Soto last year with his pitch selection breaking into the big leagues as a rookie. And now it's been oftentimes taking strikes down the middle, chasing the breaking ball off the outside. Chase rate the last couple of games has been better. So again, we're looking for anything to signal a turnaround. And there's been a game here or there, but nothing consistent. So hopefully, he's got a lefty tonight. They got a lefty tomorrow he's going to face. Hopefully he can stay in there. We know when he's going well, he hangs in there against lefties and powers the ball to left center field. That's what we're looking for tonight.
Jags, one area of this ball club that's very healthy long term is the outfield. You mentioned Woods struggles currently in the short term, but I think we've seen enough to know this guy's going to be a star, maybe a superstar player for the Nationals. They've also got Dylan Cruz coming back from injury, the former number two pick. We've seen Dalen Lyle at the big league level. Bright future for him, perhaps, offensively. Robert Hassel is 4-for-9 since being recalled with 3 extra base hits. He's done some good things. What have you seen from Hassel in this second go-round? I know it's a small sample, but he seems like he's been able to drive the ball a little bit.
Confident approach. I mean, he talked about he felt he was a little bit passive as the at-bats piled up his first time in the big leagues, went down to AAA, started raking again right away, and has come up and has raked right away. So he's going to be in there against the lefty tonight. You know, he was not in there, interestingly, against the righty in last night's game, came off the bench and hit a double in the ninth inning. So this is going to be interesting. I mean, Dylan Cruz has yet to go 9 innings, so they're obviously taking their time on his rehab, considering that he missed almost 2 to 2.5 months. Miguel Cairo said today in his press conference, he's looking at this as almost like a mini spring training for Cruz. So he's going to at least finish this week, if not carry the rehab assignment into next week. So at that point, you've got a decision to make. When Cruz comes back, ostensibly to play every day, well, who sits? I mean, Dalen Lyle doesn't deserve to sit. Robert Hassel is playing well. Jacob Young has struggled a bit offensively the last week, but obviously gives you premium defense. So there's going to be options and decisions to be made, and tough decisions, because it's better to have too many choices than not enough choices. And right now they're going to have a lot of choices in the outfield.
Jags, appreciate the time. Hopefully we can call a win tonight.
Yeah, I'm hoping for a scoreless top of the first. Let's start with that.
That would be a baby step. We'll accept that, Jags. Thank you, buddy.
And we'll have fun nonetheless.
Yes, you will. Absolutely. We will be listening right here on The Fan. 6:15 pregame, 6:45 first pitch. Be good, Dave. Let's keep the blitz moving. Zach Selby, who covers the Commanders for the Commanders site, commanders.com, makes his first ever Beltway Blitz appearance. Zach, we appreciate a couple of minutes. I know you're in Foxborough for the joint practice today. Be our eyes and ears out there. What was the session like? How intense was it? And how much did the Commanders get out of it, do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think they got a lot out of it. And I think that's really what they wanted. They wanted a lot of film and a lot of evaluation opportunities for, you know, things that do well, things that didn't do as well, things that can work on a little bit. But, you know, there was some fights here and there, got a little chippy on the defensive side of the field. But overall, I think it was, you know, like I said, some good, some things that they need to work on, but a lot of film for DQ and his staff to work on. I think they got what they needed out of it.
Was it primarily ones that got the work today?
You know, I would say, you know, it was the ones, but also I would say the twos and the threes got in some work there. And DQ even mentioned the top of his presser that there's going to be some players who are going to get a lot of work today that are going to get less work in the game and vice versa. So you see guys like Jay Daniels who got a lot of work, guys like Sam Hartman, Josh Johnson, not getting as much work because they're probably going to be playing a lot more in the preseason game. So it was a good mix, but I'd say the starters probably got a lot more work than the backups.
Friday night game looms now for the Commanders and the Patriots. You mentioned in your takeaways after practice, I saw a video you had done, that Laremy Tunsil really stood out. I don't want to say he's been quiet at camp, but he's had a bunch of veteran days. You know, it's not like there's a ton going on in 11s generally. There's been moments where he's flashed, but it sounds like today was his coming out party as they played another team.
Yeah, he was really good. And here's what I'll say. If you're not talking that much about an offensive lineman, that means the offensive lineman is doing his job. Because usually if an offensive lineman gets a lot of attention, that means he's probably letting someone go or giving up a sack or something like that. No, Laremy Tunsil has been a stalwart for really most of training camp. And you can just really see how whenever he anchors on these bull rushes, like, that guy's just not going anywhere. Same thing with, like, these speed rushers. Like, they're running the hump. They're not getting to Jay Daniels really at all. You can see his footwork. You can see his hands. He's a long dude, and he's such a prototypical tackle size. And he uses all of his like physical traits to really just stand out and really like use them to his advantage. So I've been a big fan of Laremy. You know, ever since he joined the team, I think he's been a great guy on and off the field. Good guy for Josh Connor to work with. And I think you really think we finally got this left tackle that's going to be able to take Jay Daniels for this year and hopefully for a long time afterwards.
What'd you make of the corner room today? It's been a standout group in camp in Ashburn. Did that continue in Foxborough?
Yeah, you know, I would say it was a little bit up and down for sure. I mean, you did see some good things. Like, you know, the group did have a good finish to the end of practice where, you know, they got an interception off tip ball from Mikey Sammerstill. Carlton Diggers made a pretty nice pass break up in the end zone earlier in practice. But you also saw some moments that, you know, they could still do a little bit of work against another opponent. I thought Trey Amos did some really good things against Stephon Diggs. No big interceptions or pass breakups, but you did see him disrupt the timing. And like I mentioned in the video that you mentioned earlier, I mean, even just like disrupting the rhythm for a number one wide receiver to get those incompletions, that really helps. That could be just as effective as getting one of those turnover plays like that. So I think you do see a lot of the good moments that they had earlier in camp, but still got some work to do, still building out the chemistry. And I'm really looking forward to see what they do on Friday against this receiver corps.
Training camp coverage on The Fan presented by Paul Henry's Window Installation, paulhenryswindows.com, your clear home improvement choice. We're talking Commanders camp and their practice today with Zach Selby of commanders.com. Zach, last one for me. Curious just about the idea now moving forward for them of the young guys that have a chance to contribute on offense. Our poll of the day is actually, who would you buy stock in for this year, Ja'Cory Krosky Merritt or Jalen Lane? How much do you think those two guys might help? And if one of them really breaks out, who would you assume it is?
Well, I think those guys are going to help out a lot. I mean, I've liked Jalen Lane a lot. He seems like he's getting maybe more of an emerging role in offense, but I think he's still primarily going to be his biggest role this year is going to be on special teams, assuming he can win that punt return job. Bill Krosky Merritt, you didn't see a whole lot out of him today, maybe a little bit quieter than some of those bigger runs he had earlier in camp, but you still saw the quickness. You still saw some of that change of direction, the vision. You saw a lot of things that you liked. It just wasn't as well, it didn't pop as much as it did earlier in camp. As far as who I would say that what I would buy a stock in, who I think would be good for a breakout, I feel like Bill has at least some of those traits there, because assuming he wins that third running back role, I think he's going to be a good change of pace for B-Rob and Austin Ekeler, because he has the ability to really work in between the tackles and also has the speed to get out in these outside zone plays. Assuming he can be as good of a pass catcher as he can, like as a runner, I think he could really open up this playbook in a way that could really excite some fans.
Zach, appreciate the time, man. Great to talk. Great to chat.
Absolutely. Great talking with you guys, too.
Let's talk about the NFL.
And to do that, we've got Denton Day of the BetMGM Network. What's up, Denton? How are you?
What up, fellas? How we doing?
Chilling, brother. So let's start with the AFC North. I asked Toby this earlier. I want to see what you think. I think there's a chance Aaron Rodgers ends up playing at a level that leads to us discussing whether or not there is a reason to start somebody else by the end of the year. What would you say to that?
I definitely think that's a possibility. I mean, he didn't play awful last year in New York. I think just everything that surrounded the Jets, well, the Jets like to jet, and it kind of made that whole situation, that season, kind of wither away. But look, like, guys that are as old as Aaron Rodgers are not supposed to be high-level players in the NFL. Eventually, father time catches up to all of us. It doesn't matter if you have the best treatment in the world or you do a lot of ayahuasca. There's no escaping father time. So eventually, it is going to catch up to him. I don't know that they have a great bridge quarterback right now, or a guy on the other side of the bridge, rather, because it is kind of weird. Aaron Rodgers is effectively a bridge quarterback in Pittsburgh, and they're just hoping that maybe Will Howard becomes something. So I guess the one thing that would maybe hamper that a little bit, Grant, is they don't really have anybody else on that roster that they can put good, any sort of goodwill or good faith into. But I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility that a guy in his 40s is not going to be good.
Staying in the AFC North, Cleveland Browns. Shedeur Sanders is going to start their first preseason game. What do you expect to see out of him, and who do you think ultimately starts and plays most of the year quarterback for Cleveland?
Probably some turnovers on their first preseason game. Hopefully some completed passes in the first preseason game as well. I mean, anyone that's going to judge Shedeur or any rookie quarterback for that matter on the first preseason game, like, you're going to get some bad football. You're not supposed to be lighting it up in the preseason. Ultimately, I think Flacco is going to be their day one guy, and then they will lose a lot of games, and eventually they will move to Dillon Gabriel, and then he'll probably lose a little bit, and then they'll move to Shedeur, and then he'll probably lose a little bit, and it'll be like that time here where there was a cycle of Robert, Colt, and Kirk, and it'll be some combination of that with all 17 of their quarterbacks.
I'm watching this SEC show on Netflix, and I know you do a lot of college football radio as well over at SiriusXM. I didn't realize, like, Brian Kelly's a really good coach, and I know people always take shots at him and hate him for some reason. I didn't realize what an old school, like, hard bleep he is. And in the first episode of this series, The juxtaposition between him and Shane Beamer is insane, where Beamer's just like loving on guys and everybody's buddy. And then you got Kelly, who's just screaming at dudes like it's 1978. What is the perception of him? Obviously, he's a great coach, but like, is that why he's unpopular? Or what's LSU's chances going into this year? I love their quarterback, Nussmeier, but like, where are they in the pecking order right now?
So I do really like Garrett Nussmeier. I think right now he's actually the best quarterback in the SEC. I know everybody's hype about Arch, and some of that is warranted, but he hasn't really played against SEC competition, or at least high-level SEC, where at the very least Nussmeier did last year. As far as why people don't like him, it's that. He is kind of a bit of a, well, he's a word that we can't really say on radio, but he rubs people the wrong way a lot. And there were some situations at Notre Dame where it actually got dangerous. Like, there were things that he was in control of that he could have made adjustments to. He did not, and it caused some really, really dangerous things. If you don't know what I mean, Google Brian Kelly and wind, and you will find it. So he's not always the nicest individual, and that kind of goes with the players and the media, whereas, like, the juxtaposition, you're right, it was crazy. That was probably my favorite part of that first episode, because you have this, like, really good, successful coach that is kind of an a-hole, and then you have this child prodigy because his father was such a massive deal at Virginia Tech, who's just like this nice, bubbly dude. He just hasn't been able to put together consecutive good seasons. So it was very, very interesting to pair those two together. I definitely think that was done on purpose. I like LSU, though, a lot. There might be a little bit of a not massive dark horse, so to speak, because the SEC is probably the most wide open that it has been in years. But I do think LSU has a pretty decent shot at winning the conference.
Well, I'm hoping Frank's son takes it a little easy on Tech in week one.
I would not expect that. I unfortunately would not. In fact, if that game goes sour for South Carolina, there's going to be a lot of unhappy people. South Carolina is kind of a sexy pick this year going into college football because of how well they ended last year and because they have a quarterback in Lenore Sellers that I think a lot of people are gravitating towards.
Yeah, first-round type talent. Denton, we appreciate you, buddy. Thank you.
Fellas, appreciate it.
Yep, be good. That is your Beltway Blitz on Grant and Danny. Everybody in town keeps saying there's no way Terry McLaurin misses week one. Jerry Jones, the owner of the Cowboys, suggested it's very possible that Micah Parsons misses week one. If that's true about Micah Parsons, why isn't it true about Terry McLaurin? Next on Grant and Danny. All right, Bresh, this is a little something here. This is new. I like this.
These are your boys' clutch.
Is this clutch? All right. I like it. To tell Dad to add this to the portfolio. This is like metal and hip-hop or something. This is like a nice...
They got that go-go vibe because it's DC Sound Attack. That's what we're talking about, the go-go.
This is go-go with some metal Bresh involved as well. Okay, I like this. This is a nice little combo piece. Welcome back, Grant and Danny on the Fancy. When Chris is at the controls, put some thought into the music, and he's gonna try to crowbar in his metal. But this time, he really played on my heartstrings with a little clutch, so I like that. Go-go. A little more near and dear to my heart. Jerry Jones is a wackadoo. Every single time Jerry Jones speaks right now, he says something outrageous. He says something kind of preposterous, and it just creates more headlines. It is this self-fulfilling thing where he talks and it gets worse. Micah Parsons gets annoyed. Micah Parsons comes back at him on social media. Very, very public, high engagement player. He's on podcasts. He does his own podcast. He's streaming video games, talking to guys at night. This has been a PR nightmare for the Cowboys now.
Mm-hmm.
Even in a way that the McLaurin thing here is not. McLaurin is unhappy with the team. Popped off at a presser at a car dealership, signs autographs for fans every single day, both because he wants to and probably in some small way to spite the team as he's holding out. And it still isn't even beginning to touch where Micah Parsons versus Dallas is, where he's saying he never wants to play for the team again. He's saying that Jerry basically tried to corner him and like close a door where his agent couldn't be there and try to get a deal done. Like, this sounds really bad.
If I could grant immortality to one person in the history of humanity, I'd give it to Jerry Jones so he can keep running the Dallas Cowboys.
That Neverland pixie dust.
Yeah,
he can't age anymore. He can't have any health issues. Him, Rufio, Hook, and the Lost Boys, bro.
Yeah, so he can keep running the Dallas Cowboys so we can keep having all the charades, all the craziness over there, and hopefully no Super Bowls for the Dallas Cowboys.
So listen to this. So this is, I'm going to read from, this is John Machado, who covers the team for The Athletic. This is Florio's piece with some quotes from some other people. But this is what Jerry Jones has most recently said now on Micah Parsons. He was quoted as saying, "We will work through it or we will not work through it." Well, those are options.
Toby
yeah.
or not Toby.
Exactly. To be or not to be. We will work through it or we will not work through it. Thank you for the insight there, Jerry Jones. He also said, when asked, are we sure he's going to be on the field for week one? You play the Eagles to open the season. Is he going to play? And are you confident? Can you say with conviction he's going to play? He said, no, absolutely not. A big part of that is the decision. How would I know that? I'm just saying no. But I'm urgent. I don't even know what that means. He goes on to talk about his urgency. It was a weird presser where he's like, I'm urgent. You guys can't tell I'm urgent? And this was part of that press conference at practice.
Again, your definition of urgent is not necessarily, I don't believe you gave a definition.
I didn't. Urgent,
okay.
I just asked, when does it get urgent?
So I stay urgent.
Okay. Okay, any confidence that he will be on the field against Philadelphia?
Again, no. Absolutely not. A big part of that is his decision.
Right.
How would I know that? I'm just saying. No, but I'm urgent.
I mean, this is an SNL sketch. Does he know?
He's urgent.
Did he hear the question? Like, I'm honestly asking. I'm not even trying to poke fun. It is very notable if someone's asking you, the question was, do you have confidence that he will play in week one? And he basically cuts him off to go, no, absolutely not.
But I'm urgent.
Does he know what he asked, or did he misinterpret what he was asking? He goes on to then, the rest of his answer is basically, like, it's up to him, kind of. So how would I know that? So maybe he was answering,
no,
honestly.
I think he was.
He was saying, I have zero confidence that Micah Parsons is going to be on the field playing in week one against Philly. But this is why I care about this. Well, I guess twofold. One, because I love watching Dallas burn. I mean, it is very, very fun.
It's incredible.
To see Jerry Jones run that team. I've been through it. Peter Angelos with the Orioles in my childhood. Dan Snyder with the Washington Redskins. Well, do I have any owners right now that are making it really hard to be a fan of my team in the Navy Yard?
That's a difficult one.
Nothing
doing
here.
Have to scratch our heads thinking about that.
But I've lived it. I know it. I know what it's like, okay? I'm with you. But watching it with the Cowboys is the best. So that's the first reason why this is great. Second, though, why I'm interested in this is Adam Peters acted like, this is business, guys. This is just how the sausage is made. Dan Quinn, every time this comes up, pretends like Terry McLaurin and Sam Cosmi are both grinding their way through the pup list. There has been zero acknowledgement that it's getting late early. Zero acknowledgement that he might not play. And that's a big reason why the entire local media has every step of the way been wrong. I'm raising my hand. Me too. I'm not calling anybody out. I've been as wrong and as loud as everybody else. I thought he would get a deal done before camp. I thought he'd be on the field when camp started. I thought he would get a deal done a couple days into camp. I thought after the hold-in, they would figure this out. Like, we've all been wrong over and over and over and over again. And it's mostly because the team is providing no insight. They're leaking no information. They're doing no feeding anything to kind of educate the media to then educate the fan base, which I think is a flawed approach, but we could get to that another day or another time if you want to. But because the media has been so wrong, the fans are kind of wrong as well. And so I guess here's my question, Toby. If Jerry Jones, in an honest moment, in a press conference that he probably shouldn't be doing, if we're being honest, is talking about Micah Parsons and asked, are you sure he's going to play in week one? And he goes, no, absolutely not. Which is the antithesis of what everybody's saying here with Terry McLaurin. Is that relevant to Terry? The Micah situation is worse. There's slightly more animus. I think he hates the Cowboys right now more than Terry McLaurin hates the Commanders. I think Terry likes the ownership group. We saw him dap up Josh Harris. I think he likes Adam Peters personally. I don't know if Micah Parsons right now likes Jerry Jones. I don't think he does. I don't know that he likes Stephen Jones. I don't think he does. So it is a different situation. But you get my question. We're all just going, he can't hold out. He's not going to miss games. There's no way he's going to miss the season. And one other team has commented now about their confidence of their guy holding out. And the comment is, yeah, we're not confident at all that he's going to show up for work.
Yeah.
Should we flash that same light over here at all on 17?
It's tough because you can definitely draw the comparisons, but at the same point, they're so different, right? The negotiations are so public for the Cowboys, as they always are, versus here, they could be very close to being done. They also could be very far apart still.
There's no reason to believe they're close to being
exactly,
done.
But they could be somewhere close, and they could end up figuring something out. I just have a hard time believing that Terry is going to leave cash on the table in terms of missing games, unless they're going to find a way to continue to do the ankle thing. And he's injured all year, which I just don't think is going to happen.
So, two things. One, you're saying it's hard to believe that he wouldn't play. Of course. That's what we've all been saying for months. But I don't even want to go back down that path. That's obvious. What I'm saying is it, like, when is it time that we just pose the idea of, yes, it makes no sense, but neither does any of this.
Correct.
You know what else doesn't make sense? That your number one receiver from the last several years, when you have no other really legitimate receiver talent, is not under contract. That the guy that has been the ultimate model team player who's walking out to practice wearing a shirt that says team on the back is currently your biggest distraction. Like, everything about this is the anti-Terry McLaurin, is the anti-relationship with him the whole way. But we're all just kind of stopping at, there's absolutely no way he misses games. And I'm saying, when do we revisit that idea? Like, it's just, and I'm a culprit. I've just taken it off the table pretty much throughout this process. For me, we're a week away from having to maybe suggest, okay, let's actually start talking about this. Because even if he shows back up in 10 days, he might not be ready for the start of the season. To their, you know, they could thing where they now say, Terry, we don't like the shape you're in. They could kind of punish his strong, but they could put him through the ringer to get him into football shape, and his whole goal is to be back on the field, and maybe you really drag him through the ringer.
Weeks ago, I was in with Danny, and we were talking about when is the moment when you start to kind of hit that panic button. Today's the day that I said, when they have joint practices in Foxborough, and now you're getting to the point where you're affecting week one.
Oh, you said today. Do you feel that way? Like, are you panicking?
I mean, I'm getting annoyed to the point that it's going to affect this football team. And I think because, you know, you go through it on a day-to-day basis, I'm thinking about it every day. Maybe I'm not full-on slamming the panic button.
1 to 10 level of panic. If you were a month ago, you're a 0. Day one of training camp, you're like a 1.5. What are you right now?
Probably a 6 or 7.
Okay, so it's elevating.
Yeah, it's to a point now where, like, I still think it gets done. If that's what we're talking about, no, I'm not all that worried about that. But what frustrates me is, does it affect week one? Maybe it's not even a holdout situation of week one. Maybe it is something where he rolls into camp and it's like, all right, we got to get him ramped up and we got to get him ready to go. And we can't have him running out there week one only on a week of practice. I can't have it affecting the early part of the season. That's why it needs to get done soon.
So here's my question. I want to open up the phones on this at 800-636-1067 here on Grant and Danny with Danny out today. Toby's in. I want to know. Jerry Jones says he has no confidence that a Micah Parsons deal is going to be done by the start of the season. And he can't say with any confidence right now that Micah Parsons isn't going to miss a game. The Micah situation in Dallas is worse than the McLaurin situation here, admittedly. But this is the only person who is talking on the record about a player who's at odds over a contract right now, and he's saying there's a really good chance he doesn't play in the first game. That's what he's saying. No one else is talking. The Bengals aren't doing that. Washington's not doing that. Buffalo with James Cook is not doing that. You just don't see it. Jerry breaks all the rules because he's a goofball and he doesn't know what he's doing.
And I think if it were something, too, though, where if Micah were to sit out games and then eventually were to sit out for an extended period of time, if he were to have to go somewhere else, he could get a contract. Terry runs into a difficult spot where if he were to miss games and play this charade that his ankle's hurting him all year and still accrue the year somehow, whatever it may be, then you run into problems.
Well, they're very different situations. We can get into how they're different in a minute. But just to kind of isolate this question for people, does the Jerry Jones comments, which shed some insight into the thinking behind the scenes with Dallas, do you think they're relevant to what might be going on here in Washington? They are playing this very cool and calm, and they're acting like this could end at any moment, even though there's been no budging and seemingly no progress on the negotiation. Everyone, media, team, fans, just keep saying, he'll be here, he'll be here, he'll be here. One team is commenting on a dispute saying, we have no idea if this guy's going to be here. Is that relevant to the Washington situation, yes or no? 800-636-1067 is the number on Grant and Danny. Danny's out, Toby's in, I'm Grant. This is The Fan, our camp coverage today and every day brought to you by Paul Henry's Windows. Paul Henry's Window Installation. Go to paulhenryswindows.com, your clear home improvement choice. Jerry Jones says he's not sure if Micah Parsons will be on the team when they play the Eagles in the first game of the season. And he's the only of the high-ranking executives, I'll say owner in his case, but he's the owner, the GM, the president, the vice president, the water boy. He does it all in Dallas, press conference all the time. He's the only guy talking who's in one of these stare-downs with a player. And it just so happens yesterday that he said, we have no confidence that he'll be ready to go, and there's a good chance that he doesn't play for us in the first week of the season. And I'm asking you, with that being the opposite of everything that is said about Terry McLaurin, should we in any way take that into account? Are we just making a giant assumption that might not be accurate? Because I'll just speak for myself. I don't want to speak for anyone else. I keep shooting down anybody who suggests he will not play in week one.
Mm-hmm.
And I've done it all along. I could be loud wrong. But my point from the beginning has been he's not going to take on an $811,000 fine by not playing football. But guess what? He wouldn't have to right now because he's quote-unquote hurt. There is no fine. He's not going to play in the preseason game Friday. There's no fine coming. He doesn't practice ever. There's no fines, $50,000 a day. He is on the PUP list. He is unable to perform physically, supposedly. Why wouldn't that just be able to continue into the regular season? We all keep pretending like it's not going to happen or speaking about how it doesn't make sense, and that's true. But none of this makes sense. Let's go to Scott in Silver Spring on Grant and Danny. How are you, Scott?
Hey, fellas. What's up, man?
Nothing much.
Hello?
Yeah, what's up?
Go ahead.
So I don't think that it's the same situation. I really believe that ownership, Adam Peters and the group are going to do what they need to do to meet at a reasonable point. But I also think that it's not going to happen because Terry is going to want to play. And he also will play because him not playing will go against his whole, I don't miss games, I'm 30, my age doesn't matter, and so on.
Good point.
But I would also like to say, you know, I agree with you guys, man. Long live Jerry Jones, man. I swear to God. I've been saying that since he got rid of Jimmy Johnson way back when. This is great.
He is incompetent, and it's the best. Yeah, long live is as well
no,
said.
No, but he brings up a good point that part of the reason that Terry, one of the things that he has on his side is he doesn't miss games. He's playing all 17. He's out there every single time. He's Mr. Reliable. If he's going to miss it over contract situations, it's a little bit different than missing it for an injury, but you're still missing games.
Well, but here's the problem. So he can easily, him and his agent will say, he played every game. We were in a dispute over a contract. I don't think you could do that. You can't have it both ways. He's on the PUP list right now.
That's true.
He's not hurt, by the way, and everybody knows that. But you can't pretend that
you're
hurt.
How is his ankle, by the way?
What's that?
How is his ankle? Is it hurt or... Should we ask Dan Quinn about this?
Yeah. Apparently, he's hitting all the markers. Him and Sam Cosmi are both having miraculous recoveries. He's ahead of schedule. I mean, if Dan Quinn does one more press conference where he pretends like Terry McLaurin is Sam Cosmi, I'm going to lose my mind. But you get my point where you can't have it both ways if you're Buddy Baker to the point where you go,
yeah,
well, he didn't play in that game because of the contract dispute. No, you've given that up.
Yeah, you've given up the charade.
If it's over an injury in the PUP list, then there's a durability question. Now, I think most teams are smart enough. They're not going to hold a game or two against him at the end if he plays 15 games over the dispute. But the point is the point, which is that his calling card and one of the big things he has in his corner right now is his durability. I don't miss games. I post. I'm reliable. I'm there for my team. Are you willing to break some of that for a game? Because the guy said he wants to play in the game. Yeah, no kidding. He also wants to practice, I bet.
Yeah.
He wants to play in a game. Yeah, he also probably wanted to report on time with his teammates for training camp.
Yeah, I mean, it also hurts his image as being the ultimate team guy, which is, again, another selling point of Terry. So it is a difficult spot. I think he's different than the Micah Parsons situation, but at some point you do have to wonder if we get to that point.
All right, so let's set a percentage when we return next. We'll both come up with one, and we'll hit the phones on this. What percentage chance would you put on McLaurin being on the field against the Giants on September 7th? Out of 100, what percent are you going to give McLaurin playing? And I'll even say, like, period. So if it could be that he's not in quite in game shape and he's on a pitch count and he's got, like, 15 to 20 snaps or whatever. But just being on the field active, playing in that game, percentage chance. 800-636-1067. 800-636-1067 is the number on G&D.